It is a Friday morning, and that means it's time to visit with Ben Fredrickson of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. We're coming to you from the Lou Fews Automotive Studios here in Jupiter, Florida. Ben is back in St. Louis. And as always, our visits on Friday are presented by good folks Henderson and Watercutty. Henderson Watercutty, STLCriminalDefense.com. No matter how big or small the offense, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, they can help you out. They're a couple of St. Louis guys. They have a firm in St. Louis, and they help out both folks in the state of Illinois and Missouri, STLCriminalDefense.com. Well, Ben Fredrickson, good morning to you. Always fun to do these visits.
Good morning, Dan. Yeah, I'm really jealous this week. I get snow here in St. Louis, and you get clear skies and sun. And I know you're working hard down there, but I'm feeling the jealousy flowing today.
Well, tough. I don't know what else to tell you. Tough.
I'll be there eventually.
Yes, you will.
Please some sunshine for me.
Absolutely. Let's jump into baseball because it is front and center right now. Just your impressions of the Astros coming back to camp, the cheating scandal in full swing, if you will, no pun intended, and a press conference that is going to leave a mark maybe on the sport, but certainly on their organization. What did you think of yesterday?
Well, here's what I think. It's remarkable to me that the Astros had, you know, what was it, more than 3 weeks to prepare for this day, and they screwed it up as bad as they did. It's remarkable that they can fare better on knowing what pitch is coming in a matter of milliseconds than they can fare better knowing which questions are coming weeks in advance and still whiff as badly as they did during this media day at spring training. Look, there were not a lot of things the Astros can say that would make everybody say, okay, you know, we get it. Let's all move on. Okay. It's hard to win this press conference, but to have such conflicting statements in a matter of minutes is hard to wrap your brain around. I mean, you have Jim Crane sitting up there saying this didn't affect the game in one moment, and then moments later saying, well, I didn't say that. No, you just did, Jim. Now you have everything you said today has been washed away. These guys wanted to have the briefest, most insincere apologies in the history of baseball and have everybody pat them on the back. And I think that kind of speaks to the culture that exists now in Houston. It's why isn't everybody for us? Why isn't everybody going to let this slide? And baseball isn't going to let it slide. I mean, there are some massive questions here that have still been left unanswered, Dan. I mean, the story the Wall Street Journal had about the code breaker system and Jeff Lunau's, you know, attempts to deny that he knew about it despite multiple people saying that he did. And the fact that that still led to a report from Rob Manfred that said this was player driven is mind-boggling, especially when you have Jim Crane saying at this press conference that it was leader driven and that those guys are now gone. Dan, those guys aren't gone. The guy who invented it still works for the team. One of the guys who put it into place still works for the team. And the Astros can't even answer if those people are going to still have jobs this season. Nothing was said during this day that makes people think that the Astros are taking this seriously, that the Astros are truly remorseful for what they've done.
I find it remarkable that they just weren't prepared for the questions. And whether it was Jim Crane or whether it was the players, I mean, there's two or three questions that you know are going to come out. Do you think it affected games? Should you still be the champions of that season? How was it done? Are there any other people involved still in your organization? If so, what are you going to do with it? I mean, these were simple things that it was kind of PR 101. You know you're going to be asked that. That's what shocked me, is that they were just ill-prepared to answer the most basic questions that were going to be thrown at them at that press conference. And when you walk away and watch the press conference, and I watched a good portion of it, I've got more questions now than I did before. I had, you know, my doubts about certain things. Now I have tons of questions, and I'm questioning myself as to how I should feel about this. Before, I was almost like what you were saying. I was almost like, well, it happened. You can't go back and change history. At least I wouldn't. And, you know, now it's something that baseball has got to deal with and clean it up. I don't feel that way anymore. I feel almost like it was cheated, lack of a better term. But, and if the Cardinals were involved or a player that I cared about was involved, intimately with this on the opposing end, I'd be pissed. So I understand, you know, coming out of this, why certain people feel the way they do. I don't know if you, if I'm conveying this right and if you feel the same way, but that's what I felt like watching this press conference.
Absolutely agree. And I thought that Pete Abraham, who covers the Red Sox, who are also being investigated currently by Baseball for Electronic Sign Stealing, said it best when he said, I saw a tweet from him that said it would be hard to imagine the Astros could have made it worse by what happened in at this media day. And yet here they are. They have made it worse. They came prepared with no answers to really common sense questions like, how can you say this was wrong, yet you're continuing to employ the people who were, you know, have strong and compelling evidence that they were involved in this? How can you say this was a leader-driven system when the commissioner's report signed off on it being player-driven? When you fired the people who were those leaders, it doesn't add up. Something is not adding up, and this does lead to more questions. Rob Manfred has to answer questions now, because why is the Wall Street Journal making parts of the investigation known that's really compelling to the average baseball fan that he left out of his report? How credible can he be in investigating the Red Sox when there seem to be so many holes in this report by the Astros? And I think, too, just the genuine smugness, almost a sneering stance that have been taken by some of the players on this Astros team that were viewed as really likable in the game. I'm talking Jose Altuve and Alex Bregman specifically. Their comments, they would have been better off not saying anything. To stand up there and talk as if they were sorry, that basically said, I'm sorry, I'm not sorry, and I'm sorry if you feel this way. Those things from two baseball players who were really kind of 1A and 1B, along with, you know, Trout and a few other guys as being kind of the faces of the game right now, is really a turnoff, I think, to a lot of fans. And I'll actually compliment Carlos Correa for seeming to be genuinely sorry, because that's a rare thing around there these days. And I think what is compounding this are players who are, you know, now the gag order is up and they're not going to listen to the league and not have opinions about this, because they're seeing how sneering the Astros are being, most of them, and they're going to have comments. I mean, Trevor Bauer is probably going to get fined for some of the things he said, but he's relentless in talking about this. You've got Chris Archer saying, how about this, that at one point an Astros player FaceTimed him to tell him, hey man, you know, you got great stuff, but you're tipping your pitches. Meanwhile, they were stealing his signs. I mean, the bravado of some of this is appalling. And I think as more people get mad, you know, you and I are not the only ones having these emotions. Players, current players are. And
oh, trust me, I know.
To get out,
trust
that Rob me. Manfred is going to have a hard time not looking at.
I couldn't agree more. And you know, I'm down here at Cardinals camp, and I've talked to some privately, and there's clearly some frustrations with what's going on. What do you think happens next? You're in the media, you're in the business of uncovering stories and truths with stories. How do you think the media handles this going forward? Because that seems like how it's going to have to come out. Like a lot of things like this, you know, media has to get involved and they start digging and they uncover things. What do you think happens from here on out leading towards opening day?
Well, I think it's the media's responsibility to not get distracted, to continue to ask questions that need to be answered. I think Jeff Albert, his comments at Cardinal spring training is an example of that. Now, whether or not you believe what Jeff Albert says, we can get into that. But I think everyone tied to this has to answer, and that there has to be a record so that if things come out that don't match the record, more questions are asked. The problem for the Astros after this, they said a lot of things that don't mesh with what Rob Manfred's report says. So now more questions need to be asked, both of Manfred and of the Astros. And they don't get to say this goes away. They don't get to decide when that happens. If they want to not answer, then they can continue to be asked, and that can become a story, them not answering. I mean, fans deserve answers. Fans want answers. Everyone outside of Houston and everyone who's not in the commissioner's office doesn't want this to go away. They want to figure out what the hell was going on here, how prevalent it is across the game, and what's going to be done to stop it. So I think that's the media's job, is to continue to ask questions of people who are involved, ask uncomfortable questions. And I thought that was, you know, on hand in multiple spots and across the game. I mean, you think about the Nationals, Anthony Rendon leaves the Nationals and nobody talks about it in the first day of Nationals spring training because this has become such a big topic. The other thing that can't happen is to get peeled off by things that are, of course, relevant, but not not as important to the game. I have to believe the introduction of the postseason rule changes, things of that nature, are released at a time that are trying to draw attention away from what's going on with this sign stealing discussion. So news is news. You got to cover it, but you can't lose focus of what's really a really important story for baseball.
It's a huge story, and it's not going to go away. What did you think of Jeff Albert and his press conference a couple of days ago just outside the Cardinals clubhouse and addressing his time when he was with Houston?
Yeah, so I'm not in Jupiter, of course, as you know, but we had, I think, probably three Post-Dispatch writers there along with a lot of other folks asking Jeff Albert questions. I give him credit for answering those questions. I think most of the Houston coaches have not had to face that music, so appreciate the Cardinals making him available and appreciate him answering. His answers are going to be met with a lot of skepticism, and I think he has to understand that. He has said not only did he not participate in sign stealing and relaying them to hitters, that he didn't know about it. And that second part is a big deal, Dan, because it is hard to believe that a guy who was in the dugout, you know, where that trash can was banging, you know, feet away from it, didn't know what was happening. That's hard for me to believe. I don't have information that makes that I can stand up and say that Jeff Albert is lying. I don't know what his ears heard and what they didn't. I know what he's told the Cardinals, and I know what he's told the, you know, we know to some degree what he's told the commissioner's office when they interviewed him. Now, if he puts himself that that's where he stands and something comes out that proves different, then he's going to have a hard time, I think, taking that to the Cardinals and saying, well, here's what I meant by that. Some of his answers I thought were a little vague. The idea that he said it would be news to him if he's caught up in this, I didn't really understand what that meant. You know if you did something wrong or if you didn't. There shouldn't be a fuzzy line there. But I think we can say safely that he has said, look, I didn't do it. I didn't know about it. There are people who don't believe that. But unless there's hard proof, then that's where things stand for now. Ultimately, what it means, unless there's some other revelation that comes out, and as we've seen with this, there are a lot of revelations that are still probably going to come out. What it means is he's under the microscope moving forward with the Cardinals. He had a bad first year. His offense did. And the Cardinals have made changes to put him in a more prominent place and to really get rid of some of the people who weren't falling in line with his plan. So now that he has his way and he's got his voices around him, this offense should get better. And I think if it doesn't improve this year, then there are going to be some hard questions asked about which direction this is moving under Albert. And also if some of his credentials were inflated by a team that wasn't doing things the right way.
Well, that to me is the question. Are you a byproduct of the system, or are your, you know, theories and how you're teaching hitting and some of your instruction, is that, you know, something going forward with a year under two under your belt, is that when you see the results? And I guess it has to come out with the results. If you see them, then you know things are going well. And if not, then you have to question it.
Well, I think the thing, and it's important to mention this too, and I believe the Cardinals when they say this, is that they hired Jeff Albert because of what he put in place in the Astros minor leagues, and that they felt like he developed hitters and had a good approach with young players that they wanted to get better at and adopt. A lot of this high-tech, you know, video replay analysis, things of along the lines that are completely fair and within reason to use when you're not in the midst of competition. My question, and this can't be answered because the Cardinals would never answer it truthfully, would be, would he be hired? Would he be the Cardinals hitting coach if the Astros would not have had that success at the major league level? Even if he was hired because of what he did in the minors, for the most part, those guys played well in the majors. So the Cardinals aren't going to say, yeah, we know it was really the Astros World Championship that pushed us over the top, if they feel like that's now tainted. So really all they can do, you know, they've clearly liked him enough to stand by him through this. He offered them an out by being connected to this thing. I think if the Cardinals truly felt like they wanted to move on, they would have, based using this as a reason. What they've said is, look, we believe in the reasons we had for hiring him, and now the proof just has to be in the pudding. And if it's not, and we're here talking about another, you know, problematic Cardinals offense a year from now, then the further Jeff Albert gets away from that time in Houston and the results aren't there, the more you wonder if that resume was sweetened by the success that had because of some of these things that shouldn't have been happening. Not that Jeff Albert was doing them, but that the players that he gets credit for developing were.
Let's put your commissioner's hat on. If you're the commissioner on this Friday and you've got people in the game and definitely fans that are questioning the validity of what's happening on the field, what can you do to clean it up? What would you do if you're the commissioner in the next few weeks?
Well, keep releasing changes to the postseason to distract, I think would be my number one. But no, I'm kidding. Rob Manfred has to address this Wall Street Journal story. He has to explain why the code breaker system and this really, you know, compelling reasons to believe that Jeff Luhnow knew about this and supported it were not only not addressed in his report that went public, but also that the opposite stance was really presented, that this was a player driven thing. He needs to answer that. He needs to answer that soon, and that's not something that's going to go away. People who are paying attention see the gaps there, and I think Manfred owes people an explanation. I think he has to answer, you know, really explain why he didn't pursue a punishment for the players, and I think he owes an answer on that as well. And then you're going to need to hear from him about how he thinks the game needs to move forward here. And, you know, you also are going to need to hear from him about where he stands on the Red Sox investigation, because that's ongoing. So he's going to have to clear some of this up. He can't run from it. He's going to have to address it and give some answers. And that's probably going to lead to a whole nother round of questions. I think ultimately baseball wants this to be something that moves past. And as you and I have talked about multiple times, it keeps splintering. It should be a story that is drying up, and it only seems to be getting more interesting.
Henderson and Watercutty, a proud sponsor of ScoopsWithDannyMac.com, a full-service criminal defense firm dedicated to helping individuals fight criminal charges in Missouri and Illinois. State, federal, municipal courts, think Henderson, Watercutty. Protecting your rights, defending your freedom. Number to call, 314-645-4400. 314-645-4400. Visit their website, stlcriminaldefense.com.
For those of you that are new to Ben Fred Fridays, it's Ben Fredrickson of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, and it's brought to you by Henderson and Watercutty, stlcriminaldefense.com. And not only do we talk about the news of the day or maybe news going into the weekend, but also news of the past week. So let's switch gears out of baseball, a little hockey. Just a frightening scene the other night with Jay Bouwmeester. Your thoughts on the Blues, Bouwmeester, and really the season going forward?
Well, it was terrifying to see it play out from back home. Followed the updates, of course, from Jim Thomas, who was with the team in California, and you know, compliment everybody who was involved in the reporting on that. I thought, you know, JT and Darren Pang and everybody involved did a great job. Fox Sports Midwest did a great job of handling that, you know, shocking emergency with both, you know, newsworthiness and also just, you know, the right hand. It's a deft touch, and I thought they did a great job, as everybody here was certainly paying attention. Good news, obviously, that Jay was alert and, you know, has responded well since being in the hospital. It's wild to think that the Blues now have to, you know, had to go back and put on their skates and play in a game last night after thinking they'd witnessed something, you know, incredibly tragic, just a couple nights before. But that's hockey. I mean, the world keeps spinning. These guys are asked to compartmentalize a lot of things, and this will probably be the biggest thing that this team is asked to overcome. I mean, you think about the things this team's overcome, Dan. They were basically on the brink of elimination before they started their run to the Stanley Cup. They weathered an off season of just, you know, could do no wrong. The whole city was ready to party and would still be partying if the Blues weren't the ones who came forth and said, hey, let's turn the attention back to the upcoming season. Let's try to do this again. They lose Vladimir Tarasenko, you know, just a few games into the season, have had this run without him and still lead the division. And now they were in a bit of a slump, and they lose their one of their best defensemen, one of their true iron men, in Jay Bouwmeester. So not only are they dealing with the shocking emotions of that event, but they also lose a really good player, a guy who'd been a +6 defenseman for them this season. So once again, perhaps more than ever before, they're going to be asked to dig deep, to rally around each other, and to try to, you know, try to find a way to find a higher level. It puts Doug Armstrong in a really challenging spot, because he's got to decide not only what do they do about Vladimir Tarasenko and his impending return versus the salary cap space, but also do they need to get some help for Jay Bouwmeester's spot. It's so early to know if he'll play again, if he will play again, when could he play again, if he's going to be cleared. I mean, we don't have these answers, and ultimately his health is the most important thing, but the team has to try to find a way to go play hockey and go play hockey well after feeling like their heads are still spinning.
One of the articles that you wrote this past week and got a lot of people talking, a lot of people thinking, was the Luther North John Burroughs high school football piece that you did. I want to let you just kind of take it from here. Explain what I read the article, but I want from your point of view why you wrote it and the information that's in there and some of the response that you've gotten.
Well, let's start with the response, because I've had a lot of great conversations with folks on both sides of this, and I really appreciate the dialogue. I wasn't simply trying to get people upset. I was trying to start a conversation about, is this the right thing? To me, I think that when you have a longstanding high school conference, the thing that keeps it together are the games that are played within it. And we've got teams that are no longer scheduling each other. I think it's bad for the conference. I think it's bad for tradition and rivalries and everything that goes along with what makes high school football especially great. I think it's a shame that John Burroughs is dropping Luther North in football, especially when that's been a very competitive series over the past 10 years. It wasn't that long ago, when you go back to 2015, when John Burroughs was the school handing out the bruising in that game, and now Luther North has risen up, and it seems like schools in the Metro League have decided, well, if they're so tough, we'll just not play them and wait until things get a little bit more competitive. I think that's a bad precedent. I understand that Luther North is really good. I understand that they can beat teams by a bunch of points, but no one seemed to care when Luther North was getting beat by a bunch of points. This is a really thorny conversation for a lot of reasons, Dan. It gets into the debate about which schools add players as transfers and how. A lot of allegations are made about Carl Reed and how he brings players into his program, and not everybody likes that. And if there's proof that he's doing that the wrong way, then those people should come forward. MSHA, the governing body of the Missouri State High School Sports, it looks into these things. You can argue whether or not it does a good job. That's fair, but the member institutions make up that organization, so if they don't like how it's being done, they should find ways to make it better. Carl Reed's had players who've sat out an entire season before they played for him. He's had players who have transferred in and missed parts of seasons. These things are vetted, and he's never once been accused by MSHA of doing this the wrong way. So it just seems to me like certain schools are allowed to be the top dogs. And when one becomes the top dog without permission or approval, then all of a sudden everybody wants to take their ball and go home. And I think that's a shame for a really historic and then longstanding high school conference.
You said you had a ton of response. You were hoping that this would open up the lines of communication. Give me some of the response. Give me some of the nitty gritty of what you've heard back on this particular piece.
Well, I've heard from people who say, hey, thank you for pointing this out. I played at Luther North and we got our tails kicked by all these teams. And now when the shoe's on the other foot, everybody wants to not play us. I've heard that. I've also heard from people who say, hey, there's no reason these teams should be playing one another when the scores are that lopsided. And to that, I'd answer there is no rule that MSHA has that they have to play. The MSHA doesn't care if you schedule teams within your conference. But I would just point out that Luther North gets crushed in soccer, Luther North gets crushed in baseball, and Luther North continues to schedule those teams within the conference because it feels like it's in part of a conference, and that comes with certain responsibilities. For people who play the player safety angle, I get it. You know, high school participation rates are a serious topic. They're dropping. You don't like to have kids being out there when they can't compete. I'd also say that the chance of injury is just as likely if you're playing in a close game versus a lopsided one. And I would point out that sometimes the score and the lopsided score doesn't necessarily indicate the style of a game, whether it's punishing or not. Carl Reed can be accused of running up scores. That's something that he has to deal with, and there wouldn't be this many bad feelings if he didn't do that. I agree with that. I would also say that they've had the score ran up on them before they got very good too. And also point out that for people who say he doesn't play backups and things of that nature, he does. His backups are pretty good. He's got a lot of players who only play one way, so that kind of decreases the amount of reserve players that are on his team. So there are lots of compelling points to argue there, but ultimately I come back to this. If you have a conference and you care about it, the schools within it should play one another. And if you don't care about it, then you probably shouldn't have the conference. That's kind of how I feel.
Henderson and Watercutty, a proud sponsor of ScoopsWithDannyMac.com, a full-service criminal defense firm dedicated to helping individuals fight criminal charges in Missouri and Illinois. State, federal, municipal courts, think Henderson, Watercutty. Protecting your rights, defending your freedom. Number to call, 314-645-4400. 314-645-4400. Visit their website, stlcriminaldefense.com.
How about the coaches around the state or even around the Midwest or country? Did you hear from them?
Yeah, and same things. I hear from a lot of people within high school sports who are frustrated by the transfer trend that's happening at Lutheran North, and you know they feel like it's not in the best nature of teams, and I understand that argument. I also say that if a kid wants to leave a school to go to another, there are a variety of reasons that can happen. Sometimes they just want to go change sports teams, and MSHA has rules in place that dictate if that's allowed and what kind of, you know, sit out policy has to come with that. Sometimes it's a full year. If a kid wants to play for a different team so bad that he's willing to sit out an entire year or play junior varsity the entire year, then I don't know who I am to tell him he can't do that. This is also a topic that, you know, that has gone back years and years, talking about, in this case, it's two private schools, but we've had the public-private debate, you know, go on in St. Louis for years and years. We've had public schools that have players who show up and want to play for their team. We've had private schools that do it. You know, this is an argument that goes back far beyond Lutheran North being a prominent power in the Metro League. So, you know, to say that that's the reason they're dropping them, I don't necessarily agree with that, considering it's two private schools, one of which has very recently been a very, very, very powerful football program at John Burroughs, which had a player in Ezekiel Elliott who happened to be from Alton during their high water mark. So a lot of schools benefit from kids who show up from different schools. I don't know who we are or who I am to decide which way of doing it is right and which way is wrong. I think ultimately, you know, this comes down to Lutheran North is not supposed to be a power in high school football in this area, and their rise to doing it has hurt a lot of people's feelings and has created a lot of reasons that all of a sudden nobody wants to play them.
Ben, great stuff as always, and thanks for doing this, and we'll catch you up next Friday, and soon enough you'll be in this warm weather here in June. I may have to go lay out today, maybe swim some laps.
Well, rub it in. Meanwhile, I'll be scraping my windshield, so think of me when you're got sand between your toes there, because I know you spend so much time on the beach and all your free time down there.
Yeah, you know what I'm doing? I'm actually in the back room of the complex, and I wear a sweatshirt because it gets cold back there, so, and then when I leave,
everybody listening feels
no,
really
no, no,
bad.
No. Here, when I show up, it's dark, and when I leave, a lot of times it's dark. So I don't want to hear your, you know, complaints back in St. Louis behind a nice keyboard and staying warm. So just stick it, will you?
All right, man. Well, we'll continue this battle off air.
You got it. Thanks, Ben.
Talk to you soon.
Henderson and Watercutty, a proud sponsor of ScoopsWithDannyMac.com. A full-service criminal defense firm dedicated to helping individuals fight criminal charges in Missouri and Illinois. State, federal, municipal courts, think Henderson, Watercutty. Protecting your rights, defending your freedom. Number to call, 314-645-4400. 314-645-4400. Visit their website, stlcriminaldefense.com.